Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Wednesday night installment here at Your Remedy is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies and promoting our speaker's book, I Object. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference, brought to you by Your Remedy is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call or have a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone during this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do were they similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless. And it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedy is in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedy is in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemedyIsInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at YourRemedyIsInTheLaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points? What are you interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. If it affects your personal rights in one way or another, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of how you think of a social a network, though nothing like a social network. It's very custom, it's very private. But then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do where I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions and all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to your remedies in the law and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Everett for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. And we make those introductions. Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have had to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not that your remedy is in the law anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy Is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
All right, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. So
without further ado, we're going to not have a conference call tonight. That's right. This is the eve of Thanksgiving, and populations on the calls prior to Halloween or Christmas or Easter or whatever are little to no people or very few people showing up. So I gave, invited Mr. Slevin to take the night off, and so there won't be anyone on the call tonight. Just wanted to share that with you and let you know. I'll be hanging around to see if we do have some that show up that haven't heard this announcement, new ones. And for those of you that are here, I thank you for your loyalty and for your participation in this exciting opportunity to defend freedom. So with that, have a good night. Thank you. And Saturday night, we'll be back with Judge Bernie. Good night. Hey, Ron, welcome to the call tonight. Thank you for showing up. Want to let you know that we're not having a call. I just unmuted your phone. You can talk.
That's not fair. I've got a brother up here in Tallahassee that wanted to listen to you.
Well, is he your three-way to men?
No, he's sitting here at the house.
Oh,
I'm up
in
Tallahassee.
He came from Tallahassee to see the big turkey?
No, I went up to Tallahassee to get the big turkey.
Okay.
I'm sitting up here in Tallahassee. I drove right by the house this afternoon.
Well, you should have thrown something out the window. I'd have caught it.
Well, if I'd have known which house to throw it at, I would have.
I'm
just on the side of the road in those woods near the exit sign.
All right. I'll throw it out along the path on the way, on my way home.
Yeah, throw a sandwich while you're at it.
All right. I'm trying to get him on Saturday night to listen to Bernie about the CRTs.
Sure.
I'll try to explain it to him.
Are we on speakerphone right now?
Yes, we are.
And what's the gentleman's name?
Richard Seidel.
Richard.
Rick Seidel.
Richard, how do you do? Michael Edward here.
Doing good.
The 30,000-foot view of what I do is I'm a marketer, and I find people who, as Jefferson said, are, quote, knowledgeable in the law and well-disposed to using it, end quote. There's two aspects of our lives that have been successfully stolen from us through our own ignorance, to which we are totally unaware that the theft has occurred, and most everyone justifies these thefts and loss by just simply saying that this is a modern society and this is how we have to live. One is the fact that you have things that you work all your life for, that you accumulate toys and whatever, land. And when a predatory banking system or a predatory debt collector or a predatory taxing system comes after you and is successful in getting a judgment against you personally, specifically against your Social Security number, you lose all that you've worked all your life for. And a simple remedy is to place yourself in a position where you become judgment-proof. I'm referring to Bernie's call on Saturday, where you become judgment-proof, and you have this judgment potentially there against you for millions of dollars, and yet they can take nothing from you that you have access and enjoyment of use simply because you don't own it. And that is how you operate, where you own nothing but control everything. And no matter what happens, no matter what judgments occur, for whatever reason, the responsibility of any real damage that you caused is now placed, that burden is on your shoulders to remedy your own bad behavior. Say, for instance, an example is you're in an automobile, you decide to try to run that light that's just hit yellow instead of braking when you could. You go through it and end up causing an accident, and the video cameras show that you actually went through a red light, and you know, you're adjudicated guilty and you have to pay all these damages. Well, it'd be great to have you be responsible and financially take care of who you injured, as you should, but you should never leave that up to a court system or a attorney who will benefit from the claim themselves in a percentage. Never leave it up to them to go into your wallet. You go into your own wallet as you see fit. A perfect example is Chappaquiddick back in the latter 60s. Ted Kennedy owned nothing but controlled everything. Even the automobile that he was in was in its own trust. And when it took him and his personal secretary over the bridge into the water where she died, the family won the unheard of amount of $1 million damage for his negligence, and the family got nothing, because Ted Kennedy at that time and till the day he died owned nothing. He just enjoyed a lavish lifestyle, and the automobile was the only thing that was akin or attached to that lawsuit. So the family got the car that had been sitting in an impound yard for 2.5 years that had been pulled from the water, the estuary. So that's all they got. Now, Teddy Kennedy should have gone back after all was said and done and said to the people, you know, I'm very sorry about the loss of your daughter. And I want you to have this check for $1 million or whatever it is. It in no way is equivalent to her worth or value in this world. But I'd like you to have this as a token from me for my great sorrow and loss of your daughter. That's what he should have done. He didn't. So it's always important to put yourself in the driver's seat when it comes to what you should be doing and not an attorney behind the wheel. That's what we do on the Saturday call that your brother talks to you about. The other thing is your person, your flesh and blood. I have court cases that can show you that you, if you claim to be a United States citizen, if you have a Social Security number that identifies you as a United States citizen on their tax rolls, et cetera, that you are property and a franchise. I'm quoting exact words, quote, property and franchise of the United States, end quote. I'm quoting a particular court case. When the Civil War was over, the people from Africa that formerly were considered property, right along with mules and horses and cattle and whatever, they no longer were slaves. And that's the 13th Amendment. Now, the 13th Amendment removed involuntary servitude from the table. It did not remove voluntary servitude. Go back and read it. It says, oddly, involuntary servitude, and not just servitude by itself of any sort or fashion. The 14th Amendment no one at that time of European descent gave the 14th Amendment any concern, because it had to do with giving civil rights to this new class of a person, that's another legal word with legal meaning, to give them residence, that's another legal word, within our nation's borders. Again, the Americans of European descent paid it no never mind. But the Americans of African descent were glad to have it, because now they had civil rights. The Americans of European descent had natural rights from the creator of the universe. The civil rights were from the Congress. Big difference of source of power from when they came. One is unalienable and the other one and avoidable, and the latter is something that can be given or taken away at will. For instance, as a Union State citizen, as an American national, I have the right to keep and bear arms, and that right shall not be infringed, period, exclamation point, end of story. On the other hand, the civil rights allow for a United States citizen who is property and a franchise of the United States to have permission upon petition to have a license to own a firearm after a background check. And once approved, conditionally, this firearm may be here, but you may not have it there. One of the initial comments to a judge in a felony charged, criminal charge, for someone who has a firearm that's not registered, maybe it was in the back seat of their car when they got pulled over for doing 75 and a 70 or whatever, The question is, Your Honor, where in the Second Amendment, where in the Constitution of the United States of America is it stipulated that I may not have a firearm in the back seat of my car? Furthermore, and for that matter, where does it stipulate that I could not have a firearm on me right now in this courtroom? And that begins the ball rolling. So what we do on the Monday night call with GW is assist you in correcting your status. When you were born, Vital Statistics got a copy first of the birth certificate. That's with the inked footprints and handprints. Then Vital Statistics made certified copies of it and produced certified copies of a birth certificate that they generated, which did not have the feet and so forth on it. It was just separately generated. They forwarded that to the State Department of the United States. And the State Department of the United States, with evidence in front of them that you were born in Atlanta, Georgia, as an example, knowingly, willingly, and intentionally placed you in the column not of being a Union State citizen, where they should have put you based on the evidence in their hand, but rather they placed you in the column of being a United States citizen. You further supported that placement by going to them perhaps when you were 10 years old for a fishing license or a hunting license. And then when you were 14 or 15, you petitioned them for a driver's license. And then, 8-10 years later, you petitioned them for a marriage license and a pilot's license and a license to practice medicine, to be able to heal people, whatever. You petition them for anything and everything that you have a natural right to do, they have converted it into a privilege to do. So we assist you and help you in correcting that status. It takes 3 weeks to 3 months usually to get it done. The Tuesday night call that we do is with John, for the most part. John heads the litigation team that assists people when the government decides to interfere in your life in whatever capacity, whether it's a traffic ticket, whether it's the IRS, or whether you've got an illegal amount of CBD gummy bears in your car with you. Over the limit the state allows you to have. Over the limit the state allows their property to have. This is what the Tuesday team does. And tonight's call is learning how to operate behind an LLC that is uniquely crafted, arranged in such a way that the LLC itself does not have a tax liability associated with its profits. So we cover all the bases. How's that for you, Richard? That's your 30,000 foot view.
Sounds great.
All righty. Question,
if I may.
Sure, Ron.
Rick has a will and has things set up for probate?
Well, that's a probate. Yeah. Or just a will to distribute property.
Yeah, he's got a will set up to distribute property and things and has someone to facilitate that after his demise. Can that be set up within the CRT in writing?
Not the will, not the probate. No. You prefer Rick over Richard?
Rick is fine, yeah.
All right, Rick. Were I similarly situated, I would operate through something called a corporation soul, and the corporation soul would be the trustee to different trusts. Now, if you're still getting behind the wheel of a car going places, right?
Right.
Okay, so I have a trust for that car. Is there anything else that you have that could generate a liability?
House.
Your house?
Yes.
Then I'd have the house in a separate trust.
It's fully paid for.
Yeah, I'd have the house in a separate trust. Then you have anything else of any value, stamp collection, gold coins, bullion, whatever, paintings. All of those would be piled into a third trust. So the automobile is in one trust for insulating it and isolating it from extending a liability that could happen to anything else. It just localizes the pain and suffering to that. Just as Teddy Kennedy localized his pain and suffering in that automobile all by itself. And that's why it was the only thing that was able to be taken. The house, again, that's a wise thing to put into a separate trust because, like you said, you know, somebody can trip on your front steps. If you got a swimming pool, some kids can run around the apron and crack their skull open, whatever. It's in a separate trust, and it's isolated from any potential damage that could ever occur in your life. It's not going to be part of the claim. And then, of course, your actual wealth in the form of numismatic coins, stamp collection, paintings, whatever, that's in a separate trust, and it's also isolated from anything that could happen. So now you've become what we call judgment-proof. Your corporation's soul, you manage. You control everything that the corporation's soul has in the various trusts. So the difference in your life from yesterday when it is the way it is today and tomorrow where it is in trusts and through a corporation soul, etc., is the difference in the way your life runs is no difference. You get in the car when you want to go and you go to sleep when you want to go to sleep, whatever. Nothing changes except that the law cannot breach those properties under any circumstances because of your activity. That's where the ideal place is for everyone. Now you talk about an inheritance. If there is a trusted person who will honor whatever is your final will and determination of what you want, to who to get to what, and so forth and so on. There is no probate when you pass. And this trusted person will sit there and gather whoever is the beneficiaries of what you're leaving behind and say that Rick wants you to have the house or he wants the three of you to have the house. And if you want, sell the house, whatever, divide the proceeds evenly among you. The person that I left here in charge as the successor manager of this corporation, soul, will do as you wish to have done. So the three of you inherit the house, or only one of you inherit. Whatever it is, that person that you trust will act on your behalf as though you're still alive and you're doing it yourself. And all that can be done without the courts involved. And when the courts are not involved, then nobody is making money off of you. And 100% of what you want to go where you want it to go is how it goes. And this is also a good time that the people that you're leaving these inheritances to may very well want to consider to rearrange their lives in the same manner so that the property that they are inheriting goes into their trusts and it's over with. Everybody's got what they were supposed to get and the property is still protected and where you wanted it to go.
Okay, if you sell a house under that that situation, is there tax on that?
No. No, there's no tax on the sale of the house because the house is owned by a trust that is a non-taxpayer. That's a legal word the IRS created. It's a single word, not two words. It's non-taxpayer is three syllable, one word, and it has that declination. There's no taxes on the sale of the property.
Okay. Because I can get a one-time tax relief because of my age, so but I'm dead. I don't know. I can't do that. Am I correct? In other words, if my wife and I have an accident, we die, then I can't claim
your one-time exemption.
My one-time exception. Because I'm dead. Is that so? It'll be
yeah.
What you
see,
pride would be the way to go.
When you put the property into a trust, you are giving the property away. You no longer own it.
I understand.
The trust.
I guess I was looking at if it wasn't in a trust.
Well, if it wasn't in a trust, it's going to go through probate in one form or fashion. People are going to make money off of it. No, that's I would never do that if I were similarly situated.
Yeah, I understand what you're talking about.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, the property that the house sits on, can that be set in a separate trust?
Yeah, sure can. In fact, when you have young people that, at our age and older, It's not like we get in trouble too often. But in our younger days, and especially when there's a mortgage on the property, on the house, we say to people, look, you get a land trust, a charitable religious trust for your land only. It'll be described by its meets and bounds, or it'll be described by its, longitude and latitude, and then you get a separate trust on the improvements of the on the land, which would be your what you commonly refer to as your address, 123 Main Street. If you have a horse barn, put that in a separate trust. You got tractor trailers and front end loaders or whatever, put each one of those in separate trusts, because they all can cause damage and liability. And these trusts that I'm talking about, they're non-renewable. In other words, once you put them in place, and they're $1,000 a piece, there's no more costs, there's no more attention that you pay to it, other than keeping your paperwork in a very, very safe place. So, at this point, since the house is owned free and clear, you would not necessarily have to have two trusts.
Okay.
And if you completely divest yourself, i.e. put them into individual trusts, things that could cause a judgment against you in the future, the automobile is the primary one. Then once you've got everything, Rick, you're at a point where you literally don't own anything anymore, because anything and everything is in trust or trusts, plural, then you are judgment proof. And any assault from any place of origin cannot take what you don't own.
Yeah. In the case of, like, you have your car in a trust and you sell the car, does the trust just dissolve, or do you have to do something?
No. No, you have one of two choices. You can either name the buyer of the car the successor trustee, and you retire as the trustee, These are all notarized agreements, and the car stays in the trust, and somebody else controls the trust. Or you sell the car out of the trust, you keep the trust, and put something else in it.
Okay.
Think of trusts as a cardboard box. Whatever you put in that cardboard box is insulated and isolated from whatever are in your other cardboard boxes. So if the automobile is in one box, you can sell the automobile out of the box, or you can sell the box with the automobile in it. And an interesting thing about real estate, let's just say that your house is in a trust, land and all, and you want to sell the house to the neighbor that's always wanted it so that they can bring their have a place for their grandkids to come and live with, you know, next door to them, whatever. You can sell the trust, and it doesn't amount to a real estate transaction. It does not amount to a real estate transaction because you didn't sell the real estate that was in the box. You sold the box.
Okay.
Think about it. Let's just say that you bought this old 1920s beautiful house, and it was the deed shows that at one time this really wealthy gangster owned the house for a decade in the 1920s and 1930s. And so you buy the house and you pay $150,000 for it because that's all it's worth. And your wife says to you, you know, I'd like to take that wall down and open up this foyer actually into the living room. So the living room and the foyer are just one the same. And you go, that's a great idea. I think I'll do that. So you check with a contractor. They come out and they go up into the attic and look down the joists and say, nope, there's no load-bearing wall here that's easily removed. No big deal. So you start to take the project on your own. Hold on a second. Yes, John.
Let's get Anne Marie.
Anne Marie or Raven?
Raven.
All right, I'm going to do Raven, and I'll connect you, and then I'm going to leave the call while you two talk. I'm doing another call right now.
Okay.
Stand by. Let me get Raven for you.
Yeah, we're calling you tonight.
Yes, wouldn't that be lovely? One second. Hey, Raven, John's here. I've got another call that I'm doing. When I connect you, I'm going to mute out and leave the call. You can just take as long as you need.
Will you record the call?
I cannot record the call. Sorry. It's on the wrong call. It's on the wrong phone.
We can call back later.
I'm muting now.
Then we
all
can
right.
Call back later.
All right. I'm back to you guys. So okay. you and your wife decide to take the project on yourself, and you're going to remove the wall, and you just want to be Joe and Susie Carpenter. And as you're taking the wall down, you hit something, and you go, what is this? You pull at it, and out comes you're tearing up some paper between the studs. And what you find is that you find wrapped in there $2 million worth of United States currency, Federal Reserve notes with silver and gold certificates. And all of that's yours, and there's $2 million worth. You just paid $150,000 for the house, and now you got $2 million in your hands. That's not a taxable thing in that respect. The house isn't worth any more, and you got $2 million that you now can add to your stamp collection.
Okay. Yeah, sounds
learning and understanding trusts, learning and understanding trusts and how to use them for your benefit and your legacy is one of the things that should be taught in every high school.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was doing or getting started to do is do some research on it and stuff. And, what you're
yep.
talking about seems very reasonable what to do.
Yep. And it's not expensive in the scheme of it's not expensive in the scheme of things, considering what it costs to bring it. Sorry.
I was going to say a trust here is anywhere from $7,000 to $15,000.
These are $1,000. Those are statutory trusts, exactly, yeah. and statutory trusts always, not sometimes, always are constructed in such a way by attorneys that they can be attacked by another attorney. That's the way they work together. These non-statutory trusts, these court-ordered trusts, charitable religious trusts, are unassailable. And they're unassailable because the one who's trying to assail against them has to go to the trustee first. Who's the trustee? Is it Rick? Nope. It's the corporation soul. And, well, who controls the corporation soul? I don't know. We're going to have to go talk to its resident agent first, which is the first barrier that you have to deal with, who is also one of my information providers that I market.
Montana.
So after you finally get past the resident agent, they're now dealing with you, Rick, who upon the first notice 4 months ago that there was an attack coming, hired a member of our team that litigates, placed them in a position within the corporation soul, within the trust, with limited special powers of attorney. And the response that the attorney coming against the trust is responded by the defender of the trust, not you. They don't know what to do with this. They never were taught what to do with this in law school. When it gets in front of a judge, the judge looks at nearly 600 years of court cases, all, not almost all settling on the benefit of the corporation's soul.
Okay. All right.
The oldest, you know who the manager is of the oldest corporation soul that we know of. You know the manager. You don't know him personally, but you know of them well. Can you think
okay.
who that might be?
Not at the moment.
Well, formerly, the manager's name was Queen Elizabeth. The new successor manager's name is King Charles.
Well, we're related to them.
Well, you might be doing inheritance.
Yeah. He married to Seymour.
Better check to see if Elizabeth left you anything.
I kind of doubt it.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm glad you called and then give me a lot of information here. So once I get myself around figuring out what to do, we'll give you a call back.
All right, real good. Let me just give you some numbers. The corporation soul is 8,000 at this point. It is scheduled for an increase to 10,000, but we don't have a date for that increase yet established. So right now it's 8,000. Each trust is 1,000. So if you get three trusts, it's $3,000. If you get 100 trusts, it's $100,000. The correcting your status is $5,000. So that's all that I could possibly get out of you.
Okay.
All righty.
Yeah.
Rick, it's a pleasure meeting you.
You can open up a TRT without having corporate soul at this time. But in the future,
yes, you may.
The corporate soul is the preferred manager or preferred trustee.
Yeah, correct. And it's not it's not the protection was never designed to operate just through the trust. It's always been the trust and the corporation soul. In fact, in the correct order, it was the corporation soul with its trusts. Here's the thing that hurts. If someone is the trustee, attorneys are taught civil law. They're not taught ecclesiastical law. And in civil law, you cannot be the trustee and the beneficiary to a trust. So when they see your name as the trustee, they go to their judge that they know on their first name basis, that they've been taking home foreclosures to, that they've been taking credit card cases to for years, and they say, you know, Rick here is trying to remove the equity that someone who has a claim against them for their behavior is trying to hide it in this trust, would like you to pierce the trust. The judge, equally ignorant at this point, will say, well, the name of the trust is who you're going after? Yeah. And they're the beneficiary of this trust? Yeah. Oh, yeah, we'll go ahead and pierce it right now. It's over with. And, poof, they have taken your trust away. Or have they? Well, under all circumstances except one, the answer is yes, you lost. But the exception, that one exception is, you have someone who comes in at great expense, comparatively to the cost of a corporation soul, and they are the defenders of the trust, and they begin their lawsuit and their claim against the piercing of the trust. And with many months to most likely years later, and tens of thousands of dollars having been spent, the defender of the trust will prevail because the law is on their side. But that's only in that one situation. So why not spend the $8,000, get the corporation sold, do it right to begin with, and mitigate all of those other issues that would have caused sleepless nights, not having access to what's in the trust, and the months and years of dealing with it with your energy, when you can just get rid of all those problems for $8,000. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Alrighty. For your information.
My pleasure. You all have a great night. I'm going to close.
I have one more question.
Sure.
I have one more question. You did record this, didn't you?
Yes, I did, as a matter of fact.
I would like a copy of that.
All righty. You'll have it.
You have such a wonderful explanation, and I can use that as future reference.
You got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Take care.
It's a pleasure meeting you, Rick.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Now you know why I listen to 3 and 4 hour conference calls.
Yeah. So.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.